Welcome to the Wise Women Diaries podcast. This is where shame and victimhood die. I am a woman that questions everything, so this podcast is a reflection of that. Here we speak on non-mainstream perspectives, like healing our childhood wounds, learning to trust ourselves, the voice of fear versus intuition, and how children are our teachers. We discuss what it looks like to own your power as a woman and step out of the medical paradigm. That's why I am obsessed with interviewing women who trust their bodies and babies in home birth and free birth, and their wild journey from maiden to mother. Ultimately, this podcast is for women who want to thrive and have inner peace, learning how to take radical responsibility for their life and shed victimhood for good.
Hello, my name is Carolina. I'm a mother of two boys, 14 months and almost 7 years, and a wife to a very devoted man who loves to cook and nourish other kids and us and our family. And I'm a 4'6" splenic projector, and I love astrology, so I have to share my three lights, the ascendant in Capricorn and moon in Capricorn, and then I'm a Scorpio sun. Astrology has actually been such a guiding light for me in terms of especially following the moon and the signs. I tend to get a little bit more emotional. I look at where the moon is, and it tends to be in a watery sign like Pisces or Scorpio or Cancer. And okay, I got to sit with myself. I got to take a bath. I got to give myself a little nourishment. I just share that because with my moon in the first house, it has just been such a guiding light for me. And now recently I have delved into human design, and all this has culminated in this like creative flow that I have right now with building my Etsy shop, with a pregnancy journal and a postpartum journal, days of the week wheel for kids, and astro chart paintings. So just really loving being in this creative and reconnecting with my own creativity. So I'm here because I wanted to share kind of the beautiful contrast of my two pregnancies and births. My boys are 5.5 years apart. The youngest is a little over 14 months now. I turned 35 when I was pregnant with my first, and my family. So I had been married for 3 years or so at that point. My husband and I love to travel, and it just never felt ready. People would tell me, "Oh, like you're getting older. Like, when are you gonna have kids?" And it never bothered me, those questions, because I always knew my time. I always trusted my time. And I trusted that I was going to have kids no matter how old I was going to be. I didn't want to be 40, which ended up happening with being pregnant, but I knew it was going to happen in its own time. And so when we were ready, I had come back from a work trip in Sri Lanka, and we were like, okay, like, let's just do it. And the first time we conceived, yeah, it was just like so quick. My body was ready. This soul, this baby, was ready. And we were living in Massachusetts working for an institution and an educational institution. And I had like the best insurance, health insurance. And so, you know, being new to the being pregnant and the birthing world or motherhood, I knew what I knew, which was, you know, that birth can happen at home. I had some friends that had birthed at home, but most births happen in the hospital, and I was always like more connected to like eating real, like good nourishing organic food and holistic medicine. And so when I decided on a practice in terms of like seeing the doctor, OB, I chose a woman who was a doctor of osteopathy. And eventually I realized that I wanted to have a midwife, and she didn't work with the midwives at the hospital that was literally a 12-minute walk away from where I was living. So I switched out of her practice and into with the midwives. As my pregnancy progressed, and you know, everything was going fine, I knew that insurance would fully cover my entire birth at the hospital. And so it like wasn't even, and at that time it was just pre owning a house where like things just break down and there goes $1,000 to fix the roof, you know? And so for me at the time when I was interviewing doulas is like, you know, the $1,000 to $1,600 at the time seemed like a lot of money, like maybe too frivolous, when my husband could be there and we were taking a Bradley Method class. So it became kind of a no-brainer to give birth in a hospital, especially because this hospital also had a water birthing room. So I thought, I'm going to have a natural birth, no interventions at this hospital with midwives, and I'm going to have a water birth. Yet all along the way during my pregnancy, I would go to every single visit that they required of you, peed in the cup to test my urine, and took the Rogam because I was B negative blood type. That said, there were some things that they recommended, like the DTaP during pregnancy or the flu shot, or like the gestational diabetes drink, it's essentially poison, that I refused and just like really held my own with that. And I felt, yes, I'm in the system, and this is what you do, but I'm protecting my own desires. Like I wish with the Rogam, I really wish I had done more research. And thankfully, I don't know if there's any ramifications from that. Maybe there are, but nothing too pronounced. But anyway, what I want to share with the pregnancy, and it'll come to light when I talk about the second one, is, okay, I was in the system. I chose, yes, a natural birth. I did a Bradley Method class. My husband was on board and supporting me. I was with midwives. Yet, I was still, like, I was working full time and I was still in my head and not in my body. Like, there was not 1 ounce of like pleasure in my body. And looking back, we may have made love a couple of times during that pregnancy. I didn't have an orgasm. Even when I tried like forcibly to self-pleasure towards the end to help with inducing this baby naturally, like I couldn't even feel pleasure even through my own touch. And so towards the end, my birth or my due date, quote unquote, came and went. So this hospital had a 2-week policy. After 2 weeks, like, or really it starts like at day 12, they want to induce because statistically it goes up. And I asked for the statistics towards the end or at like the time I had terrible night's sleep. I went in and they were like, okay, you're going to stay here. We're going to induce you. And I'm like, no, you're not. I did not have a good night's sleep. I'm not going into labor feeling like this. Like I am going home. And so they had me sign a consent form. And I asked this, okay, you're saying that the statistics for stillbirth go up after 2 weeks. can you tell me what the statistic is? How much is it? And it was like under 2%. Okay. and this is like my first like realization. It's all about a liability for them. You know, I'm just a statistic. You know, they're not looking at me as like a sacred vessel for a human being coming into the world, unique. And so I think there were like two or three more days. They had me come back every day. Thank God I live so close to the hospital. I just walk there and do ultrasounds. And then there was a point where I was like, I can't just keep going back. I tried the Foley bulb. I tried sex. I tried acupuncture. I was recommended castor oil, but I couldn't find like an organic brand, and I just didn't want to go that route without doing enough research for it, or like having someone hold space for me with that. And so I came in to the hospital, and then it was like day 15 or 16. Like, when's the date that you want this baby out? And I went back home and I said, okay, if he doesn't come, if I don't go into labor by tonight, I'll come in tomorrow and we'll start the induction process.
Are these days the days after your due date?
Yes, these are, 16, 17 days after the due date. Yeah. And what I learned, so for like a few years after, up to a few years after this birth, I thought my body could not go into labor on its own. Like, I literally thought that. I'm like, I tried everything, you know, and the only thing that got me into labor was, well, first Cervidil, a cervical ripening agent, and then Pitocin. Yeah. Like, this is like the, until like, actually, maybe it was even being pregnant the second time and starting, like, I took the Free Birth Society course, started realizing like women can actually give birth fine a month after their so-called due date, you know? So this, and I realized it's not a date. It's a whole month, you know, even 6 weeks when a woman can go into labor. And so
I've actually recently been wondering, I think my friend and I were talking about this topic. We are wondering if there are women out there that have gone 3 weeks overdue, 4 weeks overdue, quote unquote overdue, and walked into a hospital and still gave birth, because I've never heard a story personally of being really past 42 weeks and walking to a hospital and denying their induction and naturally going into labor. I personally haven't heard it, but I want some stories. Like, what would they do?
I mean, it would have to be someone that is like, no, I want to give birth in a hospital, but I'm not listening to you. I don't know where you would find someone who's like really just digging. Cause I ended up teaching birth classes within a year after this first birth. And I found that most women just wanted to follow the orders. Like, they didn't want to do anything wrong. They were too afraid because
it can't be a bad girl.
Yeah. What if something happens because I said no, you know? And that's a really tough thing. My Bradley class teacher was really supportive in terms of like giving me options. So I told her what was going on, and she's like, well, you could take Cytotec by mouth, or you could take Cervidil, it takes longer. They wanted me to take Cytotec, and I said, no, Cervidil. So, you know, like, I worked with them, but like still following my own intuition to a certain extent. So I didn't go into labor. And so we started, I was 50% effaced at the time that we started the Cervidil, the induction. That took 12 hours. You know, they didn't like that. That, you know, because Cytotec is quicker, and they'll just like increase the doses until you're fully ripened. And then they immediately, so like I came in at 9, and at around midnight, they put me on Pitocin, and they started just increasing it over, I guess, 8 hours. So it wasn't like full on immediately, like you got the full dose. And so my labor started at around 9 a.m. And they actually put us in the water birthing room. I ended up, because I was now on these interventions, I couldn't now birth in the water. Although if I found myself so close to pushing in the water, I'm sure they wouldn't like drag me out of there.
My question is, you wanted a natural birth, mm-hmm. but you were taking these drugs for induction. In your mind, were you thinking, I could be induced with big pharma drugs, but I can still have a quote unquote natural birth?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know if I would say like natural birth, because for me, a natural birth is like nothing, you know, like no interventions at all. What I was thinking, like, okay, so you're going to tell me I need to get on Pitocin, but I'm not going to do the epidural. Like, that's my, and maybe because I'm a Scorpio and I can, like, I'm fine with like feeling the depths of the pleasure and the pain and the, like, I'm fine with really like strong, intense feelings in the body. And so maybe that helped me, like having that resolve, like I know that I can do this. And I didn't have anything. So they say, like, who knows, but it's different for every woman, obviously, like the pain threshold, that you feel more pain because during when you're on Pitocin versus when you have oxytocin naturally flowing through your body. And so I didn't have anything to compare it to. So I just was like, okay, this is it. This is what it is. And there was a moment during this birth that I just was like, I don't know how much longer I can do it. They would leave us alone for the most part, with my husband just staying there. There was a moment where he came back and they were like, they kept checking me and I doing cervical exams. And to me at the time, it actually helped because every time they did like maybe three. I was further along. So like, you know, it was like 3 and 5 and 7 and then I'm almost there. And so it actually helped me, like, okay, like this is, but I know it can work against you if you aren't further along than the previous one. I don't recommend doing that to everyone. But it just felt like the right thing for me. And there was a moment where, like, I couldn't do it anymore, and that cervical exam helped. And then a little bit later on, so I was on the bed on my knees with my hands against the back of the bed. My husband was behind me, like literally the entire labor, he was giving me counter pressure on my sacrum. It's just like I needed his touch and that firm, the hands firmly on my back. And then like he was like close to me, like grabbed his face and gave him like the most passionate kiss. And we had like the most deeply passionate kiss. Like I hadn't even remembered kissing him in that way for years. since like maybe the first year or so, I don't know, the first date. And then like literally I felt like a lightning bolt of prana into my yoni, and like it felt orgasmic. And then I was like, but what if someone walks in? You know, so like that energy was just like didn't have anywhere to go. And I don't know how it faded when the next contraction came through, but I was able to ride that wave like a lot more, with like more surrender and ease. Having experienced that, which was like, I'm like, oh my God, like this is, crazy. This is amazing. Like my body can just do this, you know, like during birth when I'm experiencing like intense pain, like I can actually also experience intense pleasure. Yeah. So that was the highlight of labor. And with my first, and then it came down to pushing, and they told me I am too tired. So I was like, you're so suggestive. So I ended up on my back, like pushing on my back, like upright a little bit. Even though I imagined myself when I was like preparing visually prior to the labor, I imagined myself on all fours, like in power. Yeah, when I was learning pull pushing, or like you just hold your breath and they take your head down and you hold onto someone's hands and close your eyes and don't breathe, like don't make a sound. They tell me like don't make a sound through your voice, like because that like it releases too much air. And thankfully the pushing was only 45 minutes. You know, like in retrospect, immediately after birth, I didn't think about any of this until I started learning about like all the options during my birth instructor training. I wish, even though I was like literally hooked up to the IV and the electronic fetal monitoring the entire time, I had some mobility, you know? So anyway, the baby came and he was perfectly healthy. He was 8 pounds, 10 ounces. And they put him on my belly. I asked for delayed cord clamping, but like you're in such a daze. They were like, okay, like the cord is loose now. I didn't even look, like I have him on me. He's all slimy and I'm just like blissed out. And it's like, okay, yeah, it's fine. Cut the cord. And they show me the placenta, which they said prior to induction that like, oh, like past 40 weeks, like your placenta starts to calcify. And like, it was perfect. It was perfect. Like it couldn't have been more beautiful and perfect. And again, I didn't know any better. And I just let them take it. They did with it, probably research. And then I stayed in the hospital for, you know, 2 days. They let us have that like golden hour with the baby in a dark room. He was born really early in the morning. So overall it was, you know, like I came out of the birth, I felt powerful. I was like, wow, I did this for the most part, like honoring my original intentions, you know, to be able to, I wanted to feel everything. I wanted to like work with my body, work with the baby. And only until later when the first lockdown started with COVID, and that kind of started to open me up even further in terms of like the PSYOP industrial, you know, medical system. And from the very beginning, both my husband and I somehow like just so amazingly, we were on the same page, and we just like, we knew that something was off, like nothing that we were told felt right. And from that perspective, like he essentially lost his work because he was catering. So that work stopped. Thank goodness I had a job and I was able to work from home. So daycare stopped, and I wish I had never put my son in daycare in the first place, but you know, you only do as well as you can in the time. And he was with him, and we had this dream of moving abroad for about a year. So COVID actually afforded us, like, not only did it awaken us in so many ways, in terms of our parenting, in terms of like our bodies, but also it like gifted us this opportunity to go actually live abroad. Because there's these two women, one living in the US, one in Italy, who came together to open a forest school in Piemonte on a biodynamic farm and vineyard. And they needed a chef to cook for the kids, ideally with experience who speaks Italian. And my husband had spent 9 months in Italy cooking prior to us meeting in 2010. And he needed a job, or he wanted a job. And it we actually wanted to sell our house before that. So it took a few months to do that. And then once we sold the house, we're like, okay, this is our chance. We sold everything except some, like, a bunch of cookbooks and pots and pans and our clothes. Took off for Italy thinking we will be there for 10 years at least. I'm Polish, so I have Polish citizenship. So, like, you know, in that sense, it was easy. Like, we would get residency and blah, blah, blah. We got there and it was kind of in a very small village, far from the ocean, far from the mountains. And after even just like 2 months there in the fall of 2020, we just felt like it wasn't the right place for us. But we were like, we're not going back to the US. We sold everything and we don't want to be there right now. And then, so where are we going to go? And we had visited Lisbon the year before and I had a good friend there. And so we just decided to go to Lisbon, and they speak English there. Like, it wasn't, at first I thought maybe it would have been a problem with not speaking Portuguese, but it wasn't. And we got to Lisbon, and then like a month later, the lockdowns happened again. And so my husband and my son like stopped going to school. Or like didn't even go, they just hung out, you know, there was no school even for almost 8 weeks. And eventually we ended up in the Algarve, which is the very south of, in the western Algarve, which is like so untouched in so many ways. And this is what did to like the ocean, to my body. I would go swim in the morning when it was 45 degrees out. And like, I loved like those cold plunges and I felt so alive. Like we met other expats who were very much on the same page as us, you know, looking for adventure, looking for freedom, doing like cacao ceremonies and men's and women's retreats and, you know, plant medicine ceremonies. It was such a healing year and a half. And towards the end of our time there, we conceived Ariel. Our first son is Raphael. And literally, I didn't know. So like basically two weeks after conception or so, we decided to move to Austin, Texas. And there was a school here and outside of Austin that was like freedom oriented and that needed a chef again. so we followed him again to back to the States, but to Texas this time, again, a place I'd never thought I would ever live prior to 2020. We came here. And so I was about 11. Well, when we touched down in June of 2023, or 2022, I was about 11 weeks pregnant. And then I hadn't seen anyone. Like, I just did a blood test to confirm for the endocrinologist to increase my thyroid medication. But other than that, I had no doctor's visits. And then we eventually got to Texas and I was in my second trimester. And I just was like, I'm fine. I don't need to see anyone. Like, and I, during that period of time, somehow I was connected to these two women who ended up having free births with their first babies. And so they were both pregnant. And when I got to, and I was about 2 months pregnant, the first was almost about to give birth. And so the free birth thing was already like in my field, just like by happenstance. And I knew that I didn't want to give birth in a hospital again. So like if there was any way I would be giving birth, it would be at home anyway. And so when I came to Texas, I began to, you know, connect with people and like shared, I wanted a free birth, but I'm also looking at midwives, like want to interview some midwives just to see if like, this is meant to be. We also didn't have insurance because we didn't need it in Portugal. We were part of the public insurance. We never went to see doctors anyway. Because I was already pregnant, insurance wouldn't even cover my birth because I was considered a pre-existing condition. It would have been out of pocket. But then I had like a day or basically 2 days where I interviewed basically five different midwives. And it was so interesting because I was very honest. I'm like, I want a home birth. I potentially want a free birth. I don't want, like, I know my body. Like, I want to be in my power. And it was so interesting. Like, they were like nice on the call. And then I was like, somehow it happened that they were like, I'm not free when you're due. Or like something happened. Or like, why don't you talk to this one? You know, like I felt abandoned because of my choices and because of my honesty. But like some of them were even like, well, we're going to have to wear a mask if like someone in our house is sick. And I even had some like, I really recommend not free birthing. I just like, okay, not you. You're not the right person. And so I felt like I was like in tears because I felt I still needed someone to be like, you can do this. But instead I had these midwives essentially say, I don't want any part of what you want because this is not how I do things. It's almost like there's like a fear, you know?
I want to point out that I know you felt, you know, hurt by them or abandoned by them because of your honesty. I'm sure you now feel like that's a gift because yeah. In your honesty, they were honest back and everyone's truth was revealed. Like that is a gift because if women hire a midwife without revealing their truth that, hey, I might not call you, then the midwife can't reveal their honest truth, which is, I don't trust you.
I love that. That's exactly the dynamic. It really was a gift in the end. The other layer of that was that when I shared this with my husband, he said, I'm here for whatever, however you want to do this. Midwife, we can pay however much they need, or just a doula, or just us, like whatever you feel is the right thing. And that was everything to me. Like I get choked up sharing that because I know that so often the men, the partners, don't fully see like the women in their power and they have their own fears that they put on them, you know? And then the women end up getting into making decisions that aren't right for them because of their partners. And so I was just like deeply grateful for that, for him. He was literally here. And while we were in Portugal, he just started to like do a lot of, or the both of us started to like come into our own like roles, the feminine in me and the masculine in him. And what does that mean in our relationship? And what does that mean for like us, like individually, you know, balancing the two? The universe and this baby was really asking for him to really step into his masculine for our family and for him and for me. And it was everything. So once had some healing around that abandonment, but it also, it was really empowering, you know, to really see this is what I want. And this is what this baby is asking of us. And just going back just a little bit about the astrology. So baby was due during Capricorn season, Sun in Capricorn. And it's an earth sign. And in astrology, like the three earth signs, Virgo is considered the maiden, Taurus is considered the mother, and Capricorn is like the grandmother. It's like the crone energy. And Capricorn rules the bones and the teeth. I had this epiphany, this like knowing that this baby holds like deep inner feminine wisdom, like crone wisdom. And some even say Capricorn is like the midwife of the zodiac and will work with me, with my own moon and rising, because the first house is like your coping mechanisms, it's your persona, to like steadily climb up that mountain, bring himself into the world with me, earth side. Once I started to kind of really look within and really listen within to those whispers of my splenic instinctive intuition, I began to build trust in the body. What also helped was like that foundation that I created in Portugal, like reconnecting myself deeply with the earth, like grounding my feet, connecting with elements, charging my water, and even the chakras, which is something I want to create a course for an embodied pregnancy through the chakras, because each chakra holds a certain element. And I was also wanting to heal my thyroid during that period of time. I wanted to roar him into the world. I wanted to like speak my truth quietly in my own way, you know, like not like shouting it from the rooftop. This is my voice through this action that I'm taking and following my instincts. And somehow I found this woman, this elder. She used to be a doula, and I wanted to take like music, prenatal music lessons. And I was sitting at a dinner with some new friends from the community, and someone was talking about this woman who teaches music lessons or like singing lessons. My ears perked up and I asked, like, can I get more information? And her website's actually prenatalmusic.com. And I'm like, this is just perfect, you know? Like, she works with pregnant women and like around singing. Like, this is exactly looking for it. She fell into my lap, and I had several of the most healing, like gentle, freeing, liberating sessions with her. I was honest with her about the free birth and my choices, and it was the first person that reflected back to me like, yes, what you feel in your body is a yes. Is a yes, and I'm here for that. And yeah, we did some like singing exercises. She shared with me a song, the song that I ended up singing in the evening to the baby and with my husband and our older son. And so I was connected to my voice. I was connected to my body too, like through pleasure. And again, this time I self-pleasured and felt that pleasure in my body. I knew what my body was capable of in terms of like the feeling, the felt experience. I didn't have a job, so I wasn't like in my mental, in my mind the whole time. I spent the time alone, which I loved, like painting and drawing and doing like women's circles, and the women here like came forth and created a mother's blessing for me. And there was just so much support. I just felt like I can step into my feminine power with such ease here, surrounded by like love and like where my choices are protected and held in the highest light. And of course, I didn't like share about it with everyone, including my family. But I didn't need to, because I was able to like be in this like receptive feminine space. Yeah, just feeling so safe and trusting. So yeah, this pregnancy was pleasure filled. And I, going back to my beliefs around when a baby would, when, if I can go into labor. So this was also like kind of in my mind, and I'm like, you know, I think having taken the free birth course, like I know my body can do this. We can make love. I didn't even think I need to do the acupuncture. Like I didn't do anything. I had a wild pregnancy. I didn't need to see anyone to confirm that everything was okay. I just trusted in it all. I thought that because my first was so late, and I probably would have gone a little bit longer had I gone into labor naturally, he wasn't going to come by his due date, you know, the quote unquote due date. And so we promised our friends where we had stayed here before. They lived like 25 minutes from where we lived, to stay during like the holidays, during December break, while they were away at their house. And I didn't think any, like I was like fully pregnant. I was literally due the last day that we were there. So I'm like, there's no way. But he decided to come a week early. I had nothing with me. Like I had a whole birth altar. I had my affirmations. I had my like little watercolor paintings like all over the wall. I had my camera set up. I wanted to take pictures. I had like the bed cover, the mattress protector, like everything. I left at my house because I thought I wasn't going to give birth there. And, but I went into labor and it was like, okay, a contraction, a wave woke me up, and I waited for the next, and I'm like, okay, I don't know how long it's been, but these are I'm in labor. My husband was sleeping in a different room with my son, and I woke him up, and it was about 4 a.m. or so. And he drew me a bath, and our son woke up, and he always loves to tell the story. We made these like honey cake cookies, and he's like, can I have a honey cake cookie? And it's like 4 a.m. He's like, yes, of course you can. And so he drew me a bath. It was like, I don't know what time it was. It was the morning, and our son fell asleep. And we decided to have a friend take him. Just felt better so Aaron could focus on me. And just like I imagined, like that steady climb of the mountain goat up the mountain, steady, steady. I would even repeat mantra steady. I had the song in my head having connected to music. I don't remember the words now, but would repeat those in my head. Aaron, at one point, like deep into the labor, sang the song Nisa. It's a Native American song of the winter moon, which is what, you know, the Capricorn moon, essentially, for like 30 minutes. I didn't want him to stop. He said he felt like our ancestors, our angels, like these invisible beings, like holding space for us. So he was like really deeply connected. And again, like I felt there was a moment where I was like, I needed him to place his hand on my yoni. So I like took it, and again, felt that like surge of ecstatic, like blissful, orgasmic energy. It came to be like 1 p.m. I thought that I was going to have the baby by 1 because they say, oh, the second will come so much faster. And then it was like 6 or 7 p.m. I ended up happening was there was a friend who was a labor and delivery nurse trained as a midwife, like that I trusted. She said, I'm happy to come over if you ever need me. And turns out that where we were staying, she was a little closer. She was only like 10 minutes away and she was not on call. And I said, I'm like, Erin, I want to know where I am. Like I kept checking myself again, like getting up to my head. The conditioning is so hard to like, go up. But she ended up coming. Erin ended up saying, she's like, I knew you were ready to start pushing. Anyway, she checked. I was fully dilated. He was just stationed really high. He ended up being a 10-pound baby. I didn't actually weigh him immediately. It was about a day and a half later. And they also lose weight, so he must have been a little bit more. And I'm a pretty petite person. So anyway, if someone told me, like if I had gone through these visits, I'm sure someone would have been like, oh, this baby is going to be big. And it would have gotten in my head. I can't possibly give birth to a 10-pound baby, you know, I can't. And but anyway, that wasn't the case. I had no idea. And so she just helped take us to the home stretch. I noticed that like every time I went on the bed, things slowed. And when I stood up, things like accelerated and intensified. And I knew I needed to like move towards that. I ended up sitting on the tub and the water broke, or not the tub, the toilet. The water broke, which was great because we were already using like all the towels for protection of the bed. And so I didn't mention this before, but the whole entire pregnancy, even prior, because my son was like, I want a sister. I thought it was going to be a girl. I want to say 20 minutes or so prior to him coming, I literally was like, he's coming soon. I caught myself. I'm like, he? Did I just say he is coming soon? And it just like, when I reflected back on it, you were so, during birth, you were so connected to the earth, to your body, but also to like the infinite, to source. And the source knows it all. And so like, you're just literally receiving this information from source because you're so open. And so I just thought that I'm like, oh, and this is partly like what made me want to give birth, like get pregnant and give birth again, just to experience that oneness, you know, with the cosmos, with the stars, with the soul of your child. And he came and I bore him out on my hands and knees. My husband caught him. And the Heidi was there like in front of me, just like holding space. She did nothing that I didn't want her like to do. And she just held space for me, like knowing that I'm doing this in my power and I know what to do and my body knows and my wisdom is coming through and this baby is wise as well. And he came and it was like 9:30 PM and thank God she came because she helped us clean everything up, put like do a laundry load of like 10 towels and we all fell asleep and with the placenta attached and we ended up burning it off sometime later the next day. And I buried it on the property a couple months later. Just like closing the cycle of this like deep connection to the earth, to nature, to the elements, and grounding him into this land that he was born on. And that was it. That was 14 months ago. Yeah.
And you want to do it again.
And I want to do it again, but I'm 42 and I'm not sure. I want to, you know, I'm healing my thyroid. I'm in the process of tapering off my medication that, again, I thought I was going to have to be on for the rest of my life. But I believe that I'm already off of it. It's just my physical body is catching up. And so who knows what life, the universe has in store for us in terms of if this is complete, if our family is complete or not. But